Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guests are the Mack Twins, and these are two absolutely wonderful human beings. I really enjoyed this conversation. The Mack Twins, Lisa and Alana, are co-founders of The Gut Stuff, and they're the authors of the new book, The Gut Stuff, An Empowering Guide to Your Gut and Its Microbes. And in today's episode, we dive into gut health, but from a very accessible way. So I've done previous episodes with some incredible guests, Dr. Megan Rossi and Tim Spector, jump straight to mind in terms of covering things from a very scientific standpoint when it comes to gut health. And the two girls, Lisa and Alana, the ladies today, have expert knowledge, but they distill the information. Their new book is speaking with 18 different experts on all things gut health, and they're able to put across the information in a very accessible way. So if you've ever been confused by the gut or that particular topic of how the gut brain axis works or the gut microbiome, today's episode is for you because it's going to break it down into very bite-sized chunks so that you can learn how the gut impacts your sleep, your skin, you know, how alcohol impacts your gut, some of the misconceptions that are out there, or what the girls call the bullshit bin. So things like carbohydrates or no carbs before marbs, in the sense of dieting before you go on holidays, and things like colonics, where there's a very low, actually in the case of colonics, zero evidence to support its ability to support your gut health. Again, we get into that, and if you should want to do it, and if you want to get some heated water up your rectum, you can, but understand there's no evidence to support it. So we'll dive into that in today's episode. But I'm not going to get too much into this. There's a lot of topics covered, from sleep, skin, alcohol, mood, to breaking down the gut-brain axis, to gut permeability and leaky gut, and not confusing the two. But without further ado, here is today's episode with two wonderful guests, Lisa and Alana, the Mack Twins, on gut health and gut stuff, sleep, skin, alcohol, carbs, colonics, and mood. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Lisa and Alana McFarlane, aka the Mack Twins. Lisa and Alana are co-founders of The Gut Stuffs and the author of the new book of the same name, The Gut Stuff, An Empowering Guide to Your Gut and Its Microbes. Whilst having incredible, successful careers as DJs and presenters as the Mack Twins, they couldn't have been further from health in the wellness world. But as soon as they realized how big the gaps in the nutrition information were, they became passionate about bringing the science to everyone. And so their gut journey began. Now a pair of young female CEOs, Lisa and Alana, are taking their team, which consists of scientists, nutritionists, dietitians, and doctors, with them as they disrupt the wellness industry by launching their workplace wellness program, widening their product offering, and creating services and resources that are available and affordable to everyone. I'm looking forward to talking all things gut health and gut stuff in today's episode. Ladies, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Hello. It's like a Celtic dream.
You've got the twin vibe going straight away. Girls, talk about one of the things before we kind of jump into the book, which I'm about halfway through now. Again, I completely geek out on gut stuff, so I love it. And you have, as I said just before we went online, a very unique way of speaking and putting information across, which I think will connect heavily with the audience of this podcast. But can you tell us a little bit about your backstory, about your timeline? Like, on your website, you've got a great kind of swipe right that goes through your backstory, like starting with the YouTube channel in 2015, interviewing scientists about the gut microbiome. But if you want to go back further than that, even tell us a little bit about your backstory.
Yeah, so we obviously, as DJs, you know, we're from working class Scotland. We were brought up on like deep fried pizza and chips for lunch and 10 Lambert and Butler. Like, this is absolutely not our world. And, you know, we lived quite a hedonistic life as DJs, as you can imagine. Our touch points with nutrition and diet were the cabbage soup diet pre-Magaluf 2005. And then we'd go to Magaluf and drink 40 litres of vodka and come home. So, you know, it definitely wasn't our world, but we volunteer for Twin Research. We were on a radio station called One Extra at the time, like reaching quite a young audience, and they wanted to get kind of younger sets of twins in for medical research. Now, we didn't even know what medical research was. I thought it was like paying students a grand to take Viagra. like, we did not know what we'd got ourselves in for. But we were always really curious about what was different between us kind of physiologically, because when we were growing up, Alana actually had a juvenile chronic arthritis, and our health pathways were completely different. So I had really bad acne, you know, ask 14-year-olds which they prefer. And, you know, we'd had really different kind of medical issues when we were growing up. So couple that with the fact, you know, we had a pretty Scottish diet. Tim was like, you guys will make the perfect guinea pigs. So he was like, the American Gut Project just happened. He was like, do you guys want to have your guts analyzed? And we were like, firstly, what's our gut? Do you mean our beer bellies? And he was like, sort of. And we were like, cool, what do we have to do? And he was like, right, you have to send your poo off in the post every day for 2 months. We were like, okay, fine. And you have to have a couple of colonoscopies. Didn't realize quite how invasive that was until we signed the waiver form. And I was like, oh, right, okay, this is like actually a camera up our bum. Long story short, we did a 2 month. The first study was 2 months. We had to eat only processed food and drink alcohol for the first month. And then we had like a kind of Mediterranean style diet program for the second. And they realized that at any one time, even though we have 100% same DNA, we only had around 30% the same gut bacteria or gut microbiome as we know now. So that kind of blew out the water everything that we knew about nutrition, because if we identical twins can't be sold the same diet, then no one can. So that was kind of that was what kind of kicked everything off.
It's such a fascinating story, because when I came across you first through Tim Spector's content, who's been on the podcast recently, and as I said, you've such a great way of putting across the information. And I think the book it's a very real one, but it's very different from Tim's book, and it's very different from the likes of, you know, Dr. Megan Rossi. It's very specific, real person, if that makes sense, in terms of your lifestyle and where you're coming at with the backstory. And I want to jump straight into it, and I am going to jump in and out of the book with a couple of different topics, but you kind of open it in terms of like the second chapter about immunity, exercise, sleep, hormones in the gut. Explain a little bit to us about the mistakes people make when it comes to their gut health in general. As somebody and as people, both of you, who've lived a lifestyle that was probably the complete opposite to maintaining and managing a healthy gut, what do you generally see with people nowadays in terms of the biggest mistakes they make when it comes to specifically, you know, the exercise, the sleep, the hormones, or the immunity side of their gut health?
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, it was where people get their information, I think, is the first thing. And, you know, following what works for one person, you know, and kind of copying that, because we all just want to be told what to do, which I think leads on quite nicely to restriction. So I think a lot of people think that they have to cut out dairy, gluten, fun, alcohol in order to maintain good gut health. And I guess the third one is the kind of concept of the magic pill. So I think a lot of the things that are marketed, particularly to our age group, are, you know, skinny teas, detoxes, cleanses. And the fact, you know, that you have to cleanse or purge yourself in some way to have good gut health are probably the three main things that we see. And it is, you know, all things that we used to fall foul to. Like, we used to do the same. I'm sure when Beyonce did that cayenne pepper thing, we were right there with her. And yeah, I would say that's, and also, like, I guess, and this isn't a criticism of anyone, but it is, you know, not learning or seeking out, you know, people will waste so much money on products, and a lot of people don't even know where or what their gut is. People just assume that it's, you know, just their stomach. So I think that kind of going back to basics is really important, and something that hopefully comes across in the book.
I think as well, I think a lot of it's to do with behavior. I know, I think, you know, especially where we're from, people see, you know, health as just not being ill, and wellness is something that Gwyneth Paltrow talks about. And I think, you know, it's so important for people to think about their health and wellness, about not just something that they do 2 weeks before they go on holiday, you know, thinking about it as that sort of all round approach, and exactly like tuning in to what works for you, really, and empowering yourself with the knowledge and the facts and the science, I think is key to start shifting that behaviour.
When it comes to health and wellness, what does that mean to each of you?
Well, you know, historically, it probably meant gong bath in a hot yoga class. but I think what we've realized now is, like, actually, for me, it's kind of switching our mindset to, you know, potentially thinking about prevention rather than waiting until something is wrong. And also, like, how great you can feel just from simple swaps. Like, you know, I guess for us, and people always say to us, what's the main one thing that you've changed? Thinking that we're going to say, you know, kombucha, kefir, and, you know, all the other things that we talk about. But it's just, honestly, it's sleep. I'm like, I've had a good night's sleep for the past year, which has been brilliant. But it's sometimes not, you know, what you eat, it's how you eat, it's the rest of your lifestyle. And I think that's what we've learned, that kind of well-being being that holistic approach, and that unfortunately there's not a one-size-fits-all magic pill solution. And for us, you know, we used to be really intimidated by that industry because it was very aspirational. So it was like, you need to spend X amount of money going on a retreat that's going to make you feel great and you'll leave feeling great. Whereas, you know, we didn't recognize that our main way to de-stress was going to the pub drinking with our pals, because that was almost meditative for us, because we just talked about everything and nothing and we felt much better afterwards. So I think it's recognizing that it doesn't have to be what magazines sell you. It can just be what you find to make you feel better.
Talk about the link between sleep and gut health. I think that's, as somebody that kind of has a horse in both of those races, I've had a history of kind of gut issues. It's one of the reasons why I kind of, I'm so interested in the topic, and would be a historically poor sleeper and needs a lot of work with it. And there's a lot of people listening to the podcast in a similar boat. Talk about the link between the two.
Yeah, so the way I always picture it in my head is and we talk about it a lot, we get a lot of questions of people that work night shifts. And our nutritionist, Christy, kind of explains it as, you know, your microbes work in shifts as well. So some of them have to come out at night and they do their job at night. And they have their own circadian rhythm like we do. And, you know, it kind of makes sense. We've always known that sleep means that we need to rest and recuperate, you know, and feel fresher in the morning. But actually, what we perhaps didn't think about is the link that how your gut microbes affect your sleep, but also how your sleep affects your microbes. And it's similarly, and I'm sure we'll get onto it with the gut brain axis as well, is that, you know, that the penny kind of drops when people realize that it's potentially a two-way street. But yeah, it's really fascinating, and it's something that people don't tend to think about. So yeah, and there's, again, in the book we've got a chapter on that, because it was really important that we wanted to include, and I think that's why we've got, you know, we've got 18 experts in the book, and I think it was really important to give the specialist voices space, because obviously, like, not one person knows everything, so it was really important for us to have a lot of voices and get like good, well-rounded opinions.
What, and this is going to be a personal question, because I definitely had this misconception around gut and sleep, that I would always think that, right, if my gut is off and if I eat the wrong foods before bed, it impacts my sleep negatively. But obviously, having read, you know, the chapter, I can't remember which chapter it is. It's pretty early on. It's chapter one or two in the book. It kind of made me rethink about the way that I was looking at the gut and sleep. What's the biggest misconception in that particular area that people have, in the sense that, is it, they look at it as an isolated thing, that, you know, your gut before bed, you feel sick, you're going to have a poor night's sleep? Or they don't look at it holistically enough in terms of starting in the morning, getting their nutrition right, getting their lifestyle right, and that'll impact their sleep. What's kind of the general misconception or the general misinformation that people tend to apply when it comes to sleep specifically in their gut?
I think, you know, a lot of it, and Rui Robertson actually has got a great quote for this from our website, is like, the quality and the quantity of sleep, you know, impacts the way in which your gut microbes work. So it's like, I think it kind of, you know, we've known that, you know, your circadian rhythm responds to light and dark and regulates your physical and mental processes and stuff. But I think there's a lot of kind of old wives' tales around eating and sleep, isn't there? Like, don't have cheese before bed, don't eat too late at night, don't have raw foods after 6 p.m. and things like that. And I think that a lot of people tend to get caught up in the relationship with what you eat before you sleep, rather than just that sleep in isolation could be affecting your gut microbes, and your gut microbes could affect your sleep. I know that's quite a complex way to think about it, but people think of them, you know, too much hand in hand, I think, and go kind of extreme with it, like, oh, I need to have a turmeric milk before bed because that'll help me sleep. And it's like, you know, if you have a turmeric milk and it makes you feel better, and you have a better night's sleep, go for gold. Like, no one's going to tell you no to that. So yeah, I get, that's quite a long-winded answer, but I think that that's probably the biggest misconceptions that we see. And I think, you know, sleep hygiene is something that we do kind of take for granted. You know, I've not got kids, but I do have a massive Labrador that wakes up at 5 o'clock. And we always say, like, you know, try and stick to a routine, things like natural light, exercise. Like, you know, if you exercise too close to your bedtime, that can disrupt your sleep. Avoiding stimulants. And actually another thing, like coffee is something that a lot of people ask us about in relation to gut health, because some people will say, like, you know, it's full of polyphenols, go for it. But equally, the caffeine, you should try and stay away from, like, nicotine and caffeine for like 8 hours before you sleep. So yeah, I think that, you know, there's lots of like little tips that we can do, but easy ones that we forget about, like no screens before bed, which I'm trying to do. I've put that timer thing on my phone that stops all the apps. Sometimes I just start them up, but yeah, start them up again. But yeah, I think trying to like a couple of those sleep tips is quite a good place to start.
You mentioned coffee and caffeine there, the polyphenols, etc. And that's a question that comes in regularly. And I know this is a Pandora's box because there's definitely not a single answer, but what's the most frequently asked question you tend to get through Instagram, through the website, you know, through YouTube, etc.? Or, you know, and I ask that knowing that there's about 50 that are probably very common, but what's the one that jumps to mind when I say that?
So we have like quite a split audience, in the sense of we have a quite distinct audience that have a digestive issue and already know that they have digestive issue and have been diagnosed. So some of their questions, obviously, we can't answer, but we get a lot of them because people feel like potentially they've been failed by their GP and they just don't know where to go. So we get like quite a lot of them, but actually the most searched bit of content on our website, which I think is probably to do with the way that Alana and I speak about things, is alcohol in the gut. So yeah, but it's good because it shows that that's an audience that aren't necessarily coming from, you know, the wellness crowd. It's generally folk like us that are interested in, you know, how alcohol affects the gut, which is exactly why we put that chapter in the book as well.
Which gives me a perfect segue. Talk to us about alcohol and its effect on the gut.
Yeah, so Gautam, who is a liver specialist that did that chapter, we were introduced to him, and now, you know, he's like our regular scientist on WhatsApp with the questions that we have. But I think it's, again, it comes from the behavioural thing about restriction that people think. And, you know, red wine also high in polyphenols, but it's the same way that we describe coffee. You know, it's like it's the same thing. It's like it has caffeine in it, which potentially not great for some people for their gut, and the alcohol aspect of red wine potentially not. But I think that we tend to have quite a binary relationship with alcohol, don't we? It's like it's got to be good for us or it's got to be bad for us. And, you know, we certainly struggle with moderation and, you know, the gray area. I've actually given up alcohol for 66 days. I'm not really sure why. I did dry January and carried it on, but I'm going to come back in style this weekend, I think. But yeah, and I think that that's, you know, that, and again, in the book, there's, and Gautam speaks about it far more eloquently than I can, about kind of gut permeability and, you know, hangovers. And actually, I thought hangovers were dehydration, but apparently they're not. And things like that, where it's like, you know, once you start to delve into the science, you might see, you know, we all know that our thresholds for alcohol are completely different. We've all got that mate that's drunk after a glass of wine and the other mate that's still standing at 3 a.m. But I think, you know, teaching yourself about the science behind it gives you the tools in your armory to make better decisions, I think.
Can you explain gut permeability for people who aren't familiar with that term?
Yeah, so gut permeability, you know, there's a leaky gut is a term that some people have sort of taken and ran with, and people have got the wrong impression of it. So your gut should be permeable. Things have to pass in and out of it. The problem is when people can, when these terms either get, you know, so like leaky gut is a good example, as I just said, like people take those terms and run with it and start to market products that are going to heal your gut or, you know, repair your gut lining and things like that. And I think that, you know, some of this is based on truth and true science. But, you know, if the kind of gateways that pass things pass in and out are too wide, then that can cause issues. But I think that you know, again, that's why going back to the kind of biology and learning about that is a good thing, because you go, oh, right, I can see how that could be a positive thing, that good things could pass in and out, or, you know, like your gut microbes teach your immune cells and things like that. And you go, oh, right, okay, I kind of understand how that works. Now I know that potentially it could be difficult to boost your immunity, because now I know the science behind it, if that makes sense.
What would be an example of good gut things passing through? Just as I asked that, as I've got a gap in my knowledge, even though I have a huge interest in this area, and as someone that's had a kind of a history of leaky gut, as most people do when you have a lifestyle, it's not dissimilar to your Megaloof 2005. I definitely lived that lifestyle as well, just not the cabbage diet with it. But what would be an example of something good coming through the gut wall?
So it's really difficult to say in terms of, you know, like vitamins and all these things that are producing, you know, again, I can't probably speak eloquently about it, but Jenna Macioki, who's an immunologist, has got an article about this on the site about, you know, I think it's difficult because people tend to come across leaky gut after they have an issue. And it's like, people think that, I don't know, and someone like yourself, it's like, you know, does gluten irritate my gut lining? Or, and people try and find a solution for that. So yeah, I'm trying to like not, you know, it's difficult to give an answer on, you know, what's good and bad for other people. A good example actually of this is, so our the latest, did Tim talk about the Zoe study, the Predict study on the podcast with you?
Touched on it super briefly towards the end, but we didn't go deep on it.
Yeah, so basically that's about your blood sugar levels spiking at different foods, right? So we actually did that test with Tim for the first ever time. So it was the two of us and Tim and another scientist. We still have the WhatsApp group called the Glucose Gang. but Alana and I spiked at completely different things. And it was really interesting, because I was like, you know, obviously that was in relation to our microbes. But it was mad to know, you know, like what, you know, and I hate to label foods good and bad, but for us as identical twins, it was completely different. Like we had completely different results. And that kind of highlighted for me about the, like with things like leaky gut, like someone's leaky gut might be, you know, different to others. And I think, you know, when we think of inflammation and leaky gut, like chronic inflammation is different, you know, that can increase your risk of things like developing metabolic disorders like diabetes and things. But you're amazingly, your gut microbes do have the power to look after your that lining as well. So if you treat your gut microbes right, they're able to do their job. But I think as well, like your gut obviously is like the main entry point into your body, so it does control like what's allowed in and what's kept out. And I think a leaky gut kind of struggles to keep the bad things out. That's probably the way I would the easiest way to describe it is that.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm going to link to that article as well from the website, because I think there'll be a lot of people that'll get value from that. That kind of gives me a nice little push on to prebiotics and probiotics in terms of looking after your gut health. Explain to us, talk to us about prebiotics and probiotics and their importance when it comes to just a healthy gut in general.
Yeah, so I mean, this was something that when we started going through the research, confused us massively, because I think even just the name, and I think the press and the media doesn't tend to help with this, because, you know, it's like people get confused and take things out of context. But to put things simply, basically a probiotic's a live microorganism that when eaten or drunk in adequate amounts confer a health benefit on the host, right? That is gobbledygook to Joe Bloggs. And we're like, what does that mean? And essentially, you know, the probiotics are the good bacteria, and the prebiotics are, you know, a specific type of fiber and the food for the good bacteria. And you can get both of these through food and through supplements. The problem that we have is it's really difficult, particularly with probiotics and probiotic supplements, to decipher kind of fact versus really expensive marketing jargon. And, you know, bacteria isn't supposed to, you know, it's supposed to come out the other end. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it didn't actually stay in my gut. Like, bacteria doesn't stay. And it's like, it's not supposed to. That's why also we need prebiotics to feed the good bacteria that are in there to make sure that they're happy. It's like the ones at the party. Do you know what I mean? They're always going to leave the party, but they want to have a good time when they're in there. And that's what prebiotics do.
Love that. That's a great analogy. I won't spend too much time on the pre and probiotics because I definitely want to jump into what is definitely so far been my favorite part of the book. And that's the myth busting toolkit. And I know there's so many, and you talk about it, you know, the bullshit bin, which is like my favorite way of phrasing it. I know there's 10 that you go through in terms of spotting nutrition nonsense, and we won't go through all 10, but what are the main ones that jump out at you? You know, you mentioned, it's funny because the Cayenne Pepper and Beyonce earlier, you know, and I know one of the examples you give in there is social media influencers or celebrities, etc. So that kind of plays into one definitely. But what are the one or two from both of your standpoints, or maybe it's the same, of the myths that are out there that people really need to know about?
Yeah, I think the no carbs before marbs is, you know, one that really needs to be addressed, because in that sort of hype of, you know, cutting out carbohydrates, we really forgot about fiber. And fiber is the unsung hero of nutrition, and it's definitely the thing that you hear us bang on the most about. But, you know, 9 out of 10 of us in the UK aren't getting enough fiber. You know, that is a lot. And, you know, the recommended daily amount is 30 grams a day, which is a lot. If you think, you know, a portion of broccoli is only 2.5 grams, or an apple's only 2.5 grams. You know, it's a lot to get up. And I think that sort of fad diet was partly responsible for, you know, that lack of fiber. So yeah, that's one that sort of is the top of getting us, yeah, a bit angry.
And if you had to pick one other apart from no carbs before marbs, what would be the next one that follows that?
Colonics.
please. I haven't covered this, and as somebody hands up that was led down the path of colonics are potentially the thing that are going to make your life considerably better, and have partaken in a couple of colonics, and then was like, I was looking for the research, and I'm like, there's nothing that supports any of this from my side. About colonics.
So, I mean, I had one. I bought one on Groupon.
Explain for people, because there's going to be some people, there'll be a portion of people who are like, I'm not sure what a colonic is. So just save them Google and explain what it is.
Sure. So it's basically, there's a few different terms for it. So colonic irrigation, colonic hydrotherapy. Basically, it involves getting a tube up your bum and warm water is flushed through. If anyone has had one, you'll know the very unique sensation that is. So sometimes, you know, so basically it flushes through your large intestine, right? Sometimes they'll put like a herbal infusion in it. I'm pretty sure the Groupon one that I got did. And the idea behind it is that waste is kind of flushed out and that your colon needs to be cleaned. So that you quite rightly said there about, you know, where the evidence at is, you know, there just really isn't any evidence to suggest the health benefits. And actually, they often come with quite a lot of, you know, unwanted side effects like tummy pain, bloating, diarrhea, soreness, and, you know, for even more severe to like dehydration, infections, you know, punctured bowels and other nasty. They're not regulated. So, you know, there's in no other instance would you go and let someone do something like that. And I think, you know, actually, it's something that we get a lot of backlash on when we talk about on our Instagram, because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people like have them and feel great after them. And I'm like, fair play. But, you know, you might experience a feeling of temporary relief, but, you know, that's going to be short term. And there really isn't the evidence to support the benefits that a lot of companies claim.
Yeah, I think that it's funny because the example I always think is like the temporary relief. Like if you have a very good bowel movement, you'll also have that temporary relief.
And your colon doesn't need a wash, yeah, unfortunately. Like, you know, and it's like, yeah, I mean, and you know, and that's not to say anyone that gets them, like, you know, we were there, we did that.
No judgment. What people want to stick up the rectum, I'm like, go for it. It's your life. If you want to go with hot water, do it. Like, I laughed when you said it's a weird sensation. That's the understatement of the year, yeah. In terms of, and I've got a couple of them because I was down that rabbit hole for a while where I was convinced that these were going to benefit me, but you know, I got one on Groupon as well. So we're both,
I mean, just the fact that they're sold on Groupon sort of says it all, doesn't it?
Tells you absolutely everything you need to know on it. I want to pull it back to Instagram. You mentioned there about you get a little bit of pushback on that, which makes sense. Like if people go and they're doing something that makes them feel good, and then if it's challenged, especially from any anecdotal standpoint, people are going to push back against it. It's just, you can come back with the evidence that there is no evidence. And I would be of the opinion, if it feels good and you want to keep doing it, by all means, keep doing it. But when it comes to Instagram, you obviously do a lot, both of you, with replying to people, with your community, sending them through the website where there's questions and articles, etc. And you obviously see a lot of misconceptions online. And you spoke about the cabbage soup diet earlier from Magaluf. You talked about, you know, skinny teas. You talked about the cayenne pepper for Beyonce. I'm curious, from both of your perspectives, it might be the same, but what do you think at the minute is, or is there a particular diet or nutritional fad out there that is inherently unhelpful for people at the minute, similar to the cayenne pepper for Beyonce or the cabbage soup diet pre-Magaluf? Is there anything in your kind of realm of consciousness now that you see regularly online that you're like, oh, this is horseshit, or this is misinformation, or this is something that really shouldn't be picking up steam in terms of a fad? Does anything jump to mind when I say that?
Celery juice. I think that, you know, celery juice, you know, if you want to have lots of celery in the form of juice, absolutely go for gold. But the problem, a lot of these things aren't harmful in, you know, in isolation. Like, if you want to have loads of celery juice, absolutely nobody's stopping you. Great. Like, it's an extra portion of vegetables, you know, it's a source of vitamin K, you're increasing your water intake. But when it starts to get dangerous is when the healing properties are exaggerated, or, you know, fabricated, and it's like it can cure cancer and everything else. And I think, you know, we've seen this a lot with COVID as well, like immune boosting foods, or, you know, vitamin drips that are going to detoxify you and prevent COVID. I think that that's why the Rooted Project's kind of myth busting tools in the book, where, you know, even for us, I learned so much with that, because it's like, you know, you have to have the tools to be able to work out what's nonsense and what's not.
Someone was telling us the other day that they did the celery juice diet and projectile vomited out an Uber onto another car. And I was like, that says it all. Like, surely that isn't worth the 20 quid Uber fine for this to drink celery all day every day. Surely not.
That's a very good point. It's one that is starting to kind of make the trend. And by all means, I think having some celery juice as part of an overall nutritional plan, by all means, go for it. It's just when you're puking out an Uber, like, you've gone too far.
to be fair, we've all been there, but, you know, just at 2 a.m. after the club.
Yeah, completely different scenario. Yeah, exactly.
That was worth it.
One of the things that I wanted to ask kind of both of your opinions, because you've lived a lifestyle, again, I know everybody listening to this podcast right now, with COVID, people can't go on holidays, there's no Magaluf, there's no Santa Ponza, there's no, you know, whatever it is. But there's a lot of people who, when things go back to normal, will go away on holidays, either for a partying holiday or with their partner, or just get away. I'm very curious, you mentioned there that one of the myths that the no carbs before MARBs, but is there something that you both wish you had known? All the people you've spoken to over the years, the book, the amount of experts that you've had conversations with, outside of the carbs, is there something or any other information that you wish you had known back in 2005, 2006, that you both know now? What kind of comes to mind when I say that?
Oh my God, we've never actually been asked that question. That is an excellent question. I think for me, like, that, well, firstly, I guess the importance of it. So it's not just about losing a stone before you go on holiday. Like, we all deserve more than that. We all deserve to know that actually potentially our nutrition and well-being can affect our health, and is linked to so many other things than just, you know, the six pack before holiday. Like, we do ourselves a disservice when we think of food and nutrition only in terms of weight loss and weight. So I guess that, and then this the addition to that is about, you know, that it's all about restriction. So I have to cut out all the things that I like, rather than adding lots of things in, like, you know, fermented foods, upping my fiber, variety, which I'm sure Tim waxed lyrical about. But yeah, I think it's that is, yeah, not, it doesn't have to be about restriction or weight loss.
Yeah, I think as well, like, you know, thinking of it from the inside out rather than the outside in is key. And, you know, I think especially in those days in 2005, 2006, when we'd have been, what, like 16, 17, you know, just saying, you know, what works for your best friend or what works for that group of friends isn't going to be what works for you. You know, you really have to have confidence within yourself and tune into your body to find out what really works for you and what makes you happy. And I think, you know, that goes with quite a lot of all aspects of life, not just when it comes to wellness and nutrition. But yeah, I think that Lisa hit the nail on the head in terms of you know, empowering ourselves with the knowledge really and the science rather than just what we read in a magazine.
I'm going to fast forward about 10 years from that question because it kind of ties in. You started the YouTube channel in 2015 and obviously have spoken to so many experts between the book and online and just different capacities. What's something since 2015 that you've changed your mind about, either, you know, gut related or health related, based on the evidence, based on a conversation you've had, or based on an expert that you've potentially worked with or, you know, have under your belt at the minute?
Well, I think, you know, the main thing that we've learned is that because the science is, you know, new and emerging, not everyone agrees on everything. And the problem sometimes within this industry is that a lot of experts, you know, and clinicians and voices online tend to argue in quite a public way. And it really doesn't help, you know, customers, consumer audiences, us as punters, when that happens. And I think that, you know, trying to explain to everyone that the science, you know, sometimes isn't firstly conclusive and secondly people don't agree on, has to be done in like a nice way. And I think, you know, yes, things should be called out if they're wrong and potentially dangerous, but I think that's what we've learned, is that actually it can be it's a difficult world to navigate. You know, the scientists don't necessarily agree with each other, never mind clinicians, never mind GPs. And then by the time it gets to the consumer and, you know, the food industry and the pharma industry, there's a lot of different voices that go on. And I think that we need to be really careful about how and what we're communicating to the public. So I think sometimes it could confuse people more when everyone fights.
I'm curious, as somebody that I think we're similar in this sense, that your content, my content, we neither of us do kind of call out culture. It's not kind of the area we go with, in terms of you very clearly try to serve your audience in your way with information and bringing on experts and talking about your experiences and everything along those lines. I try and do something similar. But what are your kind of views on call out culture? And the reason I ask that is this is a kind of a trend that's been coming up in a couple of my personal conversations with friends recently. As somebody that doesn't do this and probably never will, what's your kind of viewpoint on that call out culture, the people that potentially call out the bullshit or call out the misinformation in a very harsh and to the point way? Is that something that you think there's a beneficial place on the internet for, or is that something that you kind of see and kind of cringe when you see it? What does that kind of feedback to you?
So, you know, this is it's a tough one. And again, like, it's something that we talk about a lot with our team. And, you know, I think that it's important and there is a place for it if things are, you know, potentially dangerous and people are being misled. But I equally think that there is a way to say something. You know, we started this business from a good place, and we wanted to, as I'm sure you did, like, we wanted to, you know, raise awareness about something that we were learning about and we're passionate about. And I think that people can use the call out culture things and, you know, calling out other businesses and people that work hard. And yeah, I think that it can be misused and it doesn't help the audience that you're trying to help. And I think that, you know, a lot of those conversations, if you're not happy with what someone's doing peer to peer, should be, you know, ring up the person and say to them, could you change the way that you say that? Can I ask you why you have? And 9 times out of 10, people are willing to chat with each other because everyone's got a common goal in trying to raise awareness about something that needs to be given a platform. And I think, you know, we're the same. Like, we always say, I've come from the music industry, and this industry can sometimes be worse than the music industry, which is saying something in terms of, you know, the arguments that can happen, which I'm sure you've experienced as well. And I just think, you know, just, yeah, be nice to each other. I think as well, you know, in these sort of times, you know, the past year, everyone's been through a lot, and to see more negativity on a place where you maybe is your escapism just, you know, isn't right, you know, keep it positive. And for us, certainly at the Gut Stuff, you know, it's all about collaboration, it's all about team and that common goal, you know. Until everyone knows about gut health, you know, our job isn't done. And, you know, that is our clear goal at the end of that tunnel. And yeah, why would we, you know, I just don't see calling out other people and being nasty. It doesn't help you get to that end goal.
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised at how far ahead you get in life by being nice and just not being a dick.
Exactly. It's a great mantra.
Yeah, it's a brain tattoo right there.
Yeah, exactly.
You spoke about positivity on the internet. I'm curious, in terms of your own lives, personal lives, is there any, because I know you speak and you work with so many experts, but when it comes to consuming information, is there any books that you've read over the last 12, 18 months that have had a very positive impact on your life? I know, obviously, with the way that you created and wrote your book, both of you, that you were kind of getting the information from people and then distilling it for the readers. But outside of your own book, does any book jump to mind that's had a positive impact on maybe even something personal development wise, but potentially health wise, that you would recommend to people or recommend people check out or potentially look into?
Yeah, so Kimberly Wilson, I don't know if you've come across Kimberly. She's at Food and Psych on Instagram. She's got a book called How to Build a Healthy Brain. And, you know, it's just, it's an incredible book in terms of, you know, obviously the content in there, but she is, she's just amazing. And yeah, so that one I would say. Yeah, and, you know, Anjali Mattel's Skincare Bible is another really great example of, you know, an industry that potentially tries to sell us really expensive products when we don't necessarily need that. And the Skincare Bible is kind of, you know, for skin, what we tried to do with the Gut Stuff, in terms of, you know, she's quite honest about what works, what doesn't, you know. It's quite, yeah, myth busting in that sense, and kind of gives you the tools to work out what to buy and what not, as well as giving you like really tangible tips. So yeah, I would say probably those two. Have you got any, Lana?
Yeah, no, I've been like mostly doing podcasts during lockdown, to be honest. And when I've read in, it's been novels. But yeah, like Rangan Chatterjee's podcast is amazing. And, you know, he speaks in such a way that's really relatable and accessible. And the experts he has on are just phenomenal. He had someone the other day who was talking about the way that female hormones affect the brain throughout the life stages, from puberty to pregnancy to menopause. And it was just absolutely fascinating. So yeah, Rangan Chatterjee, and his Instagram as well is amazing.
Yeah, it's a great podcast. I'm subscribed to that one as well. You mentioned skincare there, and that is something that I wanted to kind of, you've given me a nice little segue into it, because I wanted to shoehorn it in somewhere. Talk about the link between skincare and gut health, because I think, I'm not sure, Alana, was it you or Lisa that had the issues with acne as a teenager? But I think that's something that over the past 18, 24 months, I've been able to see that link between issues with your gut and your skin. Can you explain that a little bit for people?
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of long been recognised in medical literature that, you know, many skin disorders are more common in those people with gut issues and vice versa. And your skin actually has its own microbiome. But we, you know, we actually asked, like, Anjali and the other experts, you know, because there's a lot of stuff for your skin, you know, like collagen shots, and, you know, there's loads of stuff. We're like, okay, what, you know, what's the pathways for allowing like a gut skin interaction? And actually, you know, there's a lot we still don't understand with that. So, you know, we do know that eating well for your skin is kind of no different to eating well for your general health, which is good, because it means it's the same kind of tips. And I think as well, it's important to note that, you know, skin disease shouldn't be treated just with diet alone. You know, there might be validated therapeutic options there, but I think there is no doubt, and the science shows that diet has a part to play, but it's part of the wider puzzle. So it's not necessarily going to be a solution in isolation. But again, in the book, Anjali kind of goes into some different tips there. But I think, you know, I think people see, you know, I think diet has to be seen when it comes to skin conditions as a potential tool in your armory rather than a solution, if that makes sense.
makes perfect sense. And to kind of tie in with the book, How to Build a Healthy Brain, and we touched on this at the very start and I wanted to bring it back. Can you explain to people the gut-brain axis? Because I think understanding that, definitely for me, when I came across it first, was a little bit of a penny drop moment in terms of how that worked. Can you explain that for people?
Totally. Like for us, I think I think it's the thing that, you know, people get most excited about it. There's a link, but equally that kind of, it's the thing that gets most sensationalized. So you'll see like, you know, have a bit of sauerkraut and it's going to cure your depression. I think that's the danger. But what we do know now is that they're, you know, your gut and your brain are intrinsically linked. There are so many ways that they communicate. So the vagus nerve, what we thought was to do with Las Vegas, unfortunately not, is like a physical connection between the gut and brain. But there's also, you know, we think of it as like that's your phone line. And then chemically, they are connected through hormones called neurotransmitters. And that's like your kind of WhatsApp. And those neurotransmitters actually play a key role in regulating how your gut works and, you know, your mood. And, you know, we spoke about before, like both dysbiosis and leaky gut are actually associated with mood disorders as well. So you can see how the science starts to connect. You know, there's loads of ways that they speak to each other. And you know, we've kind of known that when you see the person you fancy, you get butterflies in your stomach, etc. But now we know that that link could potentially work the other way. But the gut brain axis is really, really complex, and you know, we are just trying to figure it out. And we actually work with Anxiety UK when we talk about the gut brain axis, because I think that diet and nutrition and kind of gut health has to be seen as, again, similar to the skin conversation, a tool in the armory rather than a solution. But you know, it's a really exciting area of science, and a lot of the research is coming out of Cork University, and we actually went to visit John Cryett and Ted there, and it is, you know, my mind is literally blown every time we speak to them. But yeah, and you know, the links between stress and the gut as well, like I think it's the sort of thing that we've all kind of known, because when you're stressed, some people, you know, you've got a talk to do at work or whatever, like anecdotally we know, but now we're starting to have the science to show us why that could potentially be.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the most exciting things I came across, in terms of it felt like, you know, you're driving from Galway to Dublin, or, you know, Edinburgh to Aberdeen, and you were given a roadmap. I was like, that's the gut brain axis in terms of how it works. I'm like, okay, it all makes sense. I was like, if I'm trying to fix a solution with, you know, mood disorders or whatever it is, that I need to have some idea of this, you know, gut brain axis connection, or else, you know, you're trying to drive from Edinburgh to Aberdeen without a map. Like, you know, so I love that. Ladies, I only have two final questions. When it comes to, obviously you put out a lot of stuff on Instagram, on both pages, your personal page and the gut stuff page. But if you had access to the Instagram and everybody on Instagram who's interested in health and wellness, the, you know, 2 billion people on the planet who have that particular interest, what gut message would you give those people? If you got access to put out one post that everybody that's into health, wellness, fitness would have access to and see, what message would you put out there for people?
God, that's such a good question again. I think it would be, you know, gut health doesn't have to be expensive or complex. Well, maybe not or complex, because it kind of is complex. Gut health doesn't have to be expensive or inaccessible. That's what I would say. It's for everyone.
I think as well, like, I think probably just like the microbiome 101. So, you know, there's this ecosystem that lives in, around and on us, and it has such a big part to play in our overall health. And it's so important. And I think, yeah, that would probably be our microbiome 101 post that I could, yeah, declare to everyone.
Love it. And the final question then, and this might be to do with the research, this might be doing with something you're doing business-wise, this might be personal life, and I'll let both of you answer, Alana and then Lisa, or Lisa then Alana, whichever order you want to take it in. But currently, and I know things are a bit up in the air with COVID and the way that the world is at the minute, but what are you both currently most excited about?
I think for me, like, we have pledged to educate 1 million people this year, and that is really where Lisa and I's passions lie. And we always try and reach audiences that would never come across us on Instagram, you know, or never come. And as part of that, you know, we've been doing lots of schools and university talks, you know, we've been doing, you know, corporate wellness for places like Balfour Beatty, and, you know, just places that you wouldn't expect us to pop up in. And that's, that's certainly where, you know, that education side is where our passions, well, you know, I can speak for both of us there, where our passions lie. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, this, the thing for me is like learning more. So like, you know, from a business perspective, our team is growing all the time. We're trying to learn business on the hoof as CEOs. You know, it's like we were, so learning and, you know, like growing with that, but also just learning more about what comes out. Like, I think that anyone that professes to know everything about gut health can't possibly. So I think, you know, it's really exciting as the research starts to fire up again and everyone can get back into labs. And it's just really exciting to see where the science is headed. And I think it's important to, you know, look, we speak to scientists from all over the world, and it's important to see, you know, hear a lot of voices and have a really open mind when it comes to this, because, you know, you can, we can all really educate and help people. And I think that, you know, we all have to kind of learn together, and that's what excites us, I think.
I love it. Ladies, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I've been dying to speak since we set it up. And I just want to kind of acknowledge that your distilling of gut health in a very accessible way, I think, is such a brilliant thing for people. For those of you online who aren't following the girls, head over and check them out at the end of today's podcast. But ladies, do you want to give a link to your social media platforms and tell people where they can pick up the book?
Yeah, so it's just at The Gut Stuff, really simple across all platforms, and thegutstuff.com, and the book is available. We actually, it's on the website, so you can, wherever you want to go for that. There's like small independent bookshops and Amazon and bigger retailers. So yeah, wherever you fancy getting it, there's a list on the site.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, I will put the link in the show notes on briankeenfitness.com and in the description for wherever you're listening to podcasts. Go check out the book, go check out the Instagram page, check out the website. Ladies, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
So there you have it, the Mac twins on the gut stuff. Sleep, skin, alcohol, carbs, colonics, and mood. Hopefully you enjoyed today's episode. If this is your first time listening, be sure to hit that follow and subscribe button for episodes coming every single Monday. And for those of you who are email people, where you like to either subscribe to newsletters or you want to get my feedback and my input from what I've taken away from today's podcast, every Thursday I send out a 3-email takeaway newsletter from the podcast. So it has all the timestamps, all the links for today's episode, but also my top 3 takeaways. So I will be sending that out on Thursday at lunchtime. If you want to subscribe to that newsletter, just head over to briankeenfitness.com. I'll link it in the description for today's episode. Pop onto the homepage, scroll down to the bottom and pop your email in there, and you will get a 3-email takeaway every Thursday from me around lunchtime. That's everything from this week's episode. Catch you all next Monday.